Welcome to this podcast from Harvest Community Church of Huntersville, North Carolina, where our vision is to make disciples who make disciples. I'm your host, Liz Stefanini.
In Genesis 32, Jacob enters the wrestling ring, but not like those found in the WWE. See what it meant for his life and ours in this sermon by Senior Pastor Jerry Barber before the WWE.
As I put the name of the company on the screen, see if you can tell what they do just from the name, Junk Luggers. You got it. That's a company that has trucks that will carry away the junk from your house. Crocodile has nothing to do with animals. It's a flooring company. One of my favorites is Lawn and Order. And, of course, that's a lawn care company. Sherlock Holmes is a locksmith company. And as you might imagine, Walk This Way, it's a Chinese restaurant. So What is a fabric and sewing store. Not many of those around these days. Let Us Eat, nice takeoff on a fresh market and sandwich shop. And finally, speaking of shops, Jitters is a coffee shop. Names can be very revealing. In the Bible, there was a link between someone's name and their character. And today, we're going to come in our series Beginnings, which is going all the way through the Old Testament book of Genesis. We come to Genesis 32, and we're going to see a name change. We're going to see Jacob's name change to Israel. Jacob meant supplanter or heel grabber. He was a twin, and his older twin Esau came out, and he was grabbing his heel, and he got that name right away. But it was about his character of trying to be a supplanter all of his life. Israel, on the other hand, means one who strives with God, or perhaps better, God strives. And in this passage, God will appear at times to be striving for and with Jacob. Jacob is, in this story, becoming Israel. It's not just a shallow name change. It's not just a new moniker. It's actually a new character. So let me set the stage. The context is that Jacob has begun his journey home back to Canaan, and God surprised him again with another unexpected meeting. After Jacob had stolen his brother Esau's birthright, Esau vowed to kill him. Once his father died, he was going to kill Jacob. So Jacob flees the promised land. He goes out to Haran, where his uncle Laban lives. He works for him for 14 years to marry his two daughters, Leah and Rachel. And he ends up staying 5 or 6 years longer. So almost 20 years has passed. And God has promised him before to bless his descendants and give him the land of Canaan. So it's time for him to leave. And he tells Laban he wants to leave, and in fact, he actually leaves at first without telling him. So he's heading back to the promised land when we come to Genesis 32. That's where he's going. Jacob intended to go meet Esau, but God intended to meet Jacob before he reentered Canaan. Now, the WWE, Chad tells me, is the worldwide wrestling entertainment. And long before there were these kind of wrestling matches, there was an epic wrestling match in the Bible. So let's introduce our contestants in the first corner. Ladies and gentlemen, in this corner, weighing 186 pounds, Jacob. Okay, yeah. Jacob was wrestler number one. I'm building off these three letters, WWE. Wrestler number one was Jacob. We pick up in the passage, Jacob also went on his way, and the angels of God met him. When Jacob saw them, he said, "This is the camp of God." So he named that place Mahanaim. Now, it's interesting how angels bracket Jacob's story relating to the land of Canaan. They were there as he was leaving the land of Canaan in a dream. There was the staircase going up to heaven, and the angels were going up and down. And now, back at Bethel, as he's leaving the promised land and traveling towards Haran, That's where that was. Now that he's on the other end going back to the Canaan land of Canaan, the angels meet him again. Mahanaim means two camps. Jacob realized he had a camp himself with people and animals, but now he sees these angels. So he knows there's two camps. There's the camp of angels. Verse 3. Jacob sent messengers ahead of him to his brother Esau in the land of Seir, the country of Edom. He instructed them, "This is what you're to say to my lord Esau. Your servant Jacob says, I've been staying with Laban and remained there till now." Now, this is something perhaps for 20 years that Jacob has been dreading. When's Esau going to find me? He's already said he's going to kill me. I wonder if he's changed his mind. And so Jacob comes up with a plan to try to reconcile with Esau. And so he sends these messengers ahead to him and tells them what to say. Notice the language. Notice the words Lord and servant there. He calls Esau his Lord, the title of respect. And he says, he calls him your servant, Jacob. Very interesting. The very one that he stole the blessing from and the birthright from. Now he's saying, I'm your servant. This displays humility. And it indicates to me that Jacob regrets, and perhaps he has repented, of his previous thievery as related to Esau. Verse 5. I have cattle and donkeys, sheep and goats, male and female servants. Now I am sending this message to my Lord that I might find favor in your eyes. When the messengers returned to Jacob, they said, we went to your brother Esau, and now he is coming to meet you. And 400 men are with him. 400 men. Now, that's the size of a small army. It doesn't appear that Esau is interested in reconciliation. It doesn't appear that Esau is saying, well, I'll forgive and forget. All they know is they're reporting, look, we went to see him and then we saw 400 men coming with him. Jacob believes that now Esau is tracking him down to murder him. Naturally, he was afraid. Verse 7 tells us, in great fear and distress, Jacob divided the people who were with him into two groups, and the flocks and herds and camels as well. He thought, if Esau comes and attacks one group, the group that is left may escape. So he's got a large contingent of people and flocks. Let's put them in two groups. If he attacks the one, at least some of them will be able to escape. And now verse 9 introduces us to the longest prayer in the book of Genesis. Then Jacob prayed, O God of my father Abraham, God of my father Isaac, Lord, you who said to me, go back to your country and to your relatives, and I will make you prosper. Let me just stop right there. In this prayer, Jacob acknowledges that God had promised to prosper him. And he admits his unworthiness. We're going to see that in verse 10. And just another indication of his humility. We don't know Jacob to be a humble person. He hasn't been. But look what he says in verse 10. I am unworthy of all the kindness and faithfulness you have shown your servant. I had only my staff when I crossed this Jordan. But now I have become two camps. He also asked God to deliver him. And this is the first record we have of Jacob praying for deliverance. I mean, Esau is coming to get him, as far as he knows. Oh, I need God to help me. The old Jacob would have tried to figure it all out himself. Now, the Jacob that's being transformed is praying. And he's asking God to deliver him. Verse 11, save me, I pray, from the hand of my brother Esau. For I am afraid he will come and attack me, and also the mothers with their children. It seems that Jacob is coming to realize that he's no longer in control of his destiny. He can't do it alone. A self-sufficient man is now desperate. He's been self-sufficient all of his life. But now he turns to God. He prays. He confesses he's not worthy of God's kindness. He asks God to help him. And again, we'll see here next in verse 12 that he's bringing up God's promises again, maybe as a reminder, maybe implying to me that he really believes God is going to come through. But you have said, Esau may be coming to kill me, but you told me something, Lord. You have said, I will surely make you prosper and will make your descendants like the sand of the sea, which cannot be counted. And he spent the night there. And from what he had with him, he selected a gift for his brother Esau. Now, the next few verses go in detail about the gift. I'll just summarize it for you. The gift was 550 animals, goats, lambs, rams, camels, cattle, and donkeys. That was an enormous present fit for a king. A small town might give a king something that large. He put them in herds that were spaced out from each other so that a little bit would come at a time. And he gave this instruction that when Esau meets them and asks, what does all this mean? They're supposed to tell Esau something. Skipping down to verse 18, you are to say, they, the animals, belong to your servant Jacob. They are a gift sent to my Lord Esau, and he is coming behind us. And that was repeated every time for each group of the animals. So there was this gradual procession of gifts designed to soften the heart of his angry brother. So, verse 21, Jacob's gifts went on ahead of him, but he himself spent the night in the camp. All right, we go back to our announcer. In this other corner, the wrestler is... well, he's not named at first. But we're going to find out, of course, that it's God. Verse 22. So we got Jacob wrestling, and who's he wrestling against? Verse 22. That night, Jacob got up and took his two wives, his two female servants, and his 11 sons, and crossed the ford of the Jabbok. That's a kind of a ford was a considered to be a gateway into a new land. They're on the border of Canaan right now. And after he had sent them across the stream, he sent over all his possessions. So everybody and everything is on the other side of the stream. Jacob, verse 24, was left alone. And a man wrestled with him till daybreak. When the man saw that he could not overpower him, he touched the socket of Jacob's hip so that his hip was wrenched as he wrestled with the man. And then the man said, let me go, for it is daybreak. But Jacob replied, I will not let you go unless you bless me. And now, I admit, this is a strange story, no doubt. A late night wrestling match. A mere touch on his hip wrenched it out of socket. Where did this wrestler get such strength? Was he divine? Well, if he's divine, why couldn't he just defeat Jacob? He could have defeated Jacob instantly. But God was making a point here. God was going to do something in Jacob and with Jacob that Jacob would never forget. Jacob sensed that this was no ordinary man, that the supernatural was in play. And what would you do in light of the supernatural? You would ask the supernatural for a blessing, and that's what he did. So they wrestle. And the end result, as we come to the E, is transformation. The man asked him, what is your name? Now, let's think about this for a second. Why do you think that man asked Jacob what his name was? Did he not know it? Of course he knew it. This was God making an appearance. Whether it was through an angel or however he chose to do it, this was God. This was divine. God wanted to make a point. He wanted Jacob to say his name. Names are powerful things. You remember most of us growing up as a child, maybe in middle school or whatever, we were called names by people. Do you remember anybody calling you any names that were derogatory? Fatso, ugly, stupid, loser. And that name stung you? Well, this man in the story is not calling Jacob a name. He is having Jacob recount his own name. Jacob is reminding himself that he's always done things his own way, and he can't keep doing it like that anymore. He wants Jacob to reveal his character with his own words, with his own mouth. One commentator acutely observes, Jacob confesses his sin in one word, Jacob. Deceiver. Supplanter. Who are you? What is your name? Oh, that's me. I'm Jacob. In verse 28, the man said, your name will no longer be Jacob, but Israel, because you have struggled with gods and humans and have overcome. Now think about how Jacob had struggled his whole life, from the moment he was born. He was grabbing at his twin brother's heel. He struggled and strove to buy Esau's birthright. Well, to sell it. He had Esau sell it to him for stew. He deceived Isaac, his father, into blessing him rather than Esau. He strove with Laban. Jacob had struggled all of his life with humans. That's who he was. But now he's struggling with God. And it says he's overcome. It doesn't mean he defeated God like he defeated humans. But he does prevail in a certain way, which we'll talk about. It's prevailing in receiving God's blessing. His overcoming was, as J.I. Packer puts it, this way. He held on to God while God weakened him and wrought in him the spirit of submission and self-distrust. In short, he clung to God long enough and came low enough for God to raise him up. And that's a good place to be. So, verse 29, Jacob said, please tell me your name. Okay, I told you my name, now tell me your name. But obviously, the divine being wasn't going to do that. He just replied, why do you ask my name? And then he blessed him there. So Jacob called the place Peniel, saying, it is because I saw God face to face, and yet my life was spared. Jacob knew that he had a genuine personal encounter with God. And after this, there's no more indication that he's afraid of Esau. But there was a lasting effect on Jacob from this. Verse 31, the sun rose above him as he passed Peniel, and he was limping because of his hip. Therefore, to this day, the Israelites do not eat the tendon attached to the socket of the hip, because the socket of Jacob's hip was touched near the tendon. Now, why did God do this? Why did God wrestle with Jacob? Why did he touch his hip and make him walk with a limp? God was changing Jacob from an independent, self-sufficient, deceitful person to someone who would rely on him before he entered the promised land. Whenever Jacob walked, from that point, he limped. And that limp reminded him that God had pushed on him hard enough to rid out the self-sufficiency. That self-sufficiency that had marked him through all of the experiences we talked about. And now, and maybe only now, he realizes it has to be God's work. Not my own work anymore. It's not up to me to get the blessing. It's not up to me to make things happen. It has to be God's work. I'm going to be killed. I'm afraid of my brother Esau. He's going to kill all of us. He's going to murder me. I can't do it anymore. And that was a great admission for Jacob. He realized that God was going to have to fulfill the promise of blessing, not Jacob. Jacob realized by his own strength he couldn't protect himself. There was no more self-sufficiency, it seems. Kent Hughes writes, the day of failure through power was over and the day of success through weakness had begun. You know, God gave that message to the man Jacob and then the nation Israel. We always want to ask, how would they have read this years later? If you look at their history, they were frequently rebelling against God while they were in the wilderness, and they needed to learn to rely on God and not themselves. Think about how he gave them the victory at Jericho, not by great military tactics, but by marching around the walls and blowing trumpets. That was to show that God alone is the one who saves and leads and protects. And throughout Israel's experience, they walked away from God. And when they would do it, they would end up in exile in Babylon and Assyria. So this message about Jacob would be an important one for Israel to hear, to see how God changed him when he surrendered. And so Israel should surrender.